In today's episode of Backpacker Radio, we sit down with the trail legend, Jennifer Farr Davis. But before we get into the show, I want to give a shout out to today's sponsor, Sawyer Products. Hey, Chance.
Hey.
What water filtration system did you use on the PCT?
The Sawyer Squeeze.
Why?
It was light, and it seemed pretty durable and easy to use, and I was really nervous that I'd fuck it up. But then I watched a YouTube video, and I was like, I can't mess this up.
Is it easy?
Yeah, you literally just tip it over and squeeze your bottle.
You just squeeze it?
Just squeeze.
I wonder why they call it that.
I don't know.
Doesn't make any sense.
It really doesn't add up.
What did our guest of the actual Today Show use?
I use a Sawyer Squeeze as well. Yeah.
I was actually, that was just a shot in the dark because I don't know what you use. So I'm glad that you use that.
I mean, it's a good shot in the dark because the chances are high that somebody uses a Sawyer.
Yeah.
A lot of people do use them.
People are confused right now because we're introducing Jennifer Farr Davis's show and
mystery guest.
A different guest is weighing in, but an accomplished thru hiker in her own right.
Matters, so.
Exactly. But the Sawyer Squeeze has a lifetime warranty. It's a 0.1 micron absolute rating. So their filters remove 99.9999999 a lot of nines.
Very many nines.
Too many nines percent of bacteria and the same amount of protozoa and
words
cysts.
They are all also tested 3 times before leaving their facility to ensure that they are operational, and that's a claim that no other domestic water filtration company can make.
Their filters are currently being distributed in over 80 countries around the world, which is probably not relevant to... Actually, no, we're pretty international at this point.
Yeah, how many countries do you think listen to us?
I didn't even know that there were 80 countries in the world.
Really?
I didn't know that.
You are.
I watched the Olympics. I watched the World Cup. How's America doing? If you want to learn more about Sawyer, aside from this terrific ad that we're giving them, you head to any outfitter near you, REI, or head to Sawyer's website at sawyer.com. Backpacker Radio, this is episode number 15, brought to you by The Trek. Chance, what's a cool, like, 15 thing? You can get your learner's permit when you're 15, right?
Not in New York.
Oh, you can in Illinois.
Ooh, I think in Florida, too.
Well, there's a lot of things that happen in Florida that shouldn't that be mentioned on the show.
Happy learner's permit in some states episode.
What's the age in New York, out of curiosity?
16.
So when do you get your license?
Halfway through 16.
16 and a half?
Yeah.
New York is bullshit.
I think that, you can get your permit when you turn...
Is the state
I
bird...
I could be wrong.
The bullshitter?
No, it is. It's you get your permit when you turn 16, and then you have to wait 6 months before you can take your driving test.
I hate New York. Make you wait an extra 6 months?
New York
I was
probably hates
I was
you
a
too.
Fully matured adult at the ripe age of 15.
Yeah, that's why we have good drivers.
Yeah. No, I was an asshole driver.
I think they don't even let you drive in New York City unless you're 18.
Do you remember how nervous you were driving a car for the first time? Actually, so here's a question. Were you more nervous driving for the driver's ed instructor or with your parents?
The driver's ed instructor just would tell me I would fail all the time. He was like, you're not going to pass. And like the guy that would also come, he would be like, you're fine. And then that guy failed and I passed.
Yeah.
And I was like so gloating the whole way home. But my parents were kind of bad sometimes. One day I was really...
I feel like your MO is a dark horse, which is ironic considering how pale you are. I can say that because I'm also pale, for the record.
I don't get it.
Okay, sorry, continue your story.
No, the one bad time I can remember about when I had my permit and I had to practice driving was I came home really drunk one night in high school, and I think my dad knew, because the next morning I woke up and like I usually had to beg him to go driving, and this one morning he woke me up like bright a.m. at 8 a.m. He's like, get up, let's go for a driving class. And I was like, what? And he was like, we're gonna go driving, don't you want to learn how to drive?
We're gonna start off by walking a straight line. Yeah. And not having a headache.
So I was crazy hungover, and he made me like practice driving and like parallel parking and stuff, and I think that was his way of punishing me.
Yeah, props to him for not just getting on you, because I feel like that's an actual worst punishment. Like,
yeah,
you having
well my mom would go nuts when I would come home like that, but
yeah.
I think my dad had like he kind of knew, and like that was his way
so
of...
So Sarah was bad cop and dad was good cop?
Dad was bad cop, Sarah was worse cop.
two bad cops. What's Sarah's husband's name?
Steve.
Sarah and Steve. A lot of S's. That's the theme of the show that nobody knows about. Anyways, timelines. This is episode 15, Learner's Permit Show. Before we get into our interview with our incredible guest, which everyone knows about, I do want to give a quick shout out to a event that the Trek is a media partner for, which is the Gear and Beer event being held at Wayfinder here, which coincides with a popular outdoor conference happening. Apparently, I can't say what conference it is because they're protective over their trademark. I'm just going to say it. And if they want to sue me, they can sue me. This has nothing to do with the event putting it on. But it happens during Outdoor Retailer. Come get me. But it's on July 24th. It goes from 4 to 10 p.m. And the premise of this event is, so apparently to get into Outdoor Retailer, to go into the convention center is crazy expensive. Yeah, so like Arc'teryx, Patagonia, all the big brands, they have huge booths there. And to do that is like five figures. They're paying a lot of money. But even to do one of the smaller booths off on the side is still thousands of dollars. We thought it would be cool to host an event for, you know, a lot of the brands that backpackers resonate with. They don't have that kind of budget, and charge them a fraction of that price. It's basically free. Get a bunch of those brands together, offer a bunch of free beer, make it free to the public, get a lot of people here, and just check out the brands that, you know, backpackers are actually using.
So they're going to go have their hoity-toity thing, and then we're going to be here having a good time.
Exactly. So if you're in Denver, Colorado, on July 24th, which you should be, come check out the Gear and Beer event held at Wayfinder.
Yeah, you can hang out with us.
We will both be there. You can come up and ask me if I like the AT, because that has not gotten old.
Oh, and I'll stand next to him laughing.
Yeah. Chance is pointing out to me that we didn't actually introduce ourselves. They probably can't tell our voices apart, so this is an important part. But my name is Zach Badger Davis, and I like that you actually typed this out. And to my left, actually today you're across from me.
Hi, I'm John.
But without too much ado, I just wanted to, you know, preview today's interview, which is awesome. Her name is Jennifer Farr Davis. There's a very good chance that you know about her. If you don't know about her after listening to this interview, I assure you, you will go down the Google rabbit hole learning everything you can, but she's an incredible person. She set the FKT, the supported FKT on the AT in 2011. For those who don't know, we go into it on the show, but FKT stands for fastest known time. It's the acronym for basically the speed record.
So when Zach was playing around on the AT getting West Nile virus, she was FKTing it.
This is true. There were actually two FKTs set that year. So to the point of it being a good weather year, it must have been because, you know, the two records were broken. She's an incredible person. She's extremely down to earth. She's funny. She's captivating. And I hope we can get her on the show again at some point in the future. But again, less of my rambling and more of our guest, Jennifer Farr Davis. Our guest, she set the supported record on the AT in 46 days, 11 hours, and 20 minutes, averaging 47 miles per day in the process. The feat earned her the recognition as National Geographic's Adventurer of the Year, or one of the Adventurers of the Year. She's the author of a trio of books, Becoming Odessa. I always get confused between Odessa and Odessa. Called Again, and most recently, The Pursuit of Endurance, Harnessing the Record-Breaking Power of Strength and Resilience. She's a wife, mother to two, and an entrepreneur, having founded Blue Ridge Hiking Company, a hike guide service based in Asheville, North Carolina. She's a fellow Davis, a fellow 2011 AT through hiker. Drink.
Yeah.
And a not-so-fun fact that we share is that we've both encountered a dead body on the trail.
Oh.
She's Jennifer Farr Davis, and she's sitting across from us. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So I want to give a little bit of context. You gave me your book at Trail Days the last time we saw each other, just about a month and a half ago, or a month ago, I guess.
You really want to start with that story?
Yeah, no, actually, I'm curious. Did I look as pale as other people told me? Because that's when I went over to your booth, is like right when the food poisoning started to set in. And it was amazing because I started to feel a little bit off then. I wasn't sure if I was just tired or dehydrated or whatnot. And then I went back to the booth and I'm like, I think I'm getting sick. Do I look pale? And one of the guys is like, you look horrific right now. So yeah, I'm.
I thought you were just like blank and sweaty because you were so excited to see me. And I mean, like, yeah,
I was starstruck too. I was starstruck, but I think there's a little bit more happening behind the scenes. I won't go into the details.
No, I don't need that.
Yeah. But that's when I was able to acquire your book, which I spent all day yesterday reading through. I read some of it on the plane right home, and it's awesome. So a lot of the questions are going to be geared toward the book, and I hope this serves as worthy promo for, we should also give the context that Jennifer's wonderful family is here along with my two dogs. So
we're hiding. Seriously hiding right now.
Yeah. Well, and it's also ambitious that your travel schedule, not only the book tour that you've done, but just recently in the last 24 hours that you went from Colorado to Charlotte, back to Colorado.
Yep.
With kids.
With kids.
That's amazing. So I get tired and cranky doing that myself, and I'd like to consider myself a fairly well-adjusted 32-year-old adult. So kudos to you and the family.
Thank you. I think through hiking kind of gets you in that mindset of being someplace different every night.
Totally.
So we've carried that over to family life. And when you start them before they know any different, it's pretty effective.
Mm-hmm. Huh, that's a good idea. It's pretty good. My parents never took me anywhere. So.
Yeah, how to raise feral children.
Yeah, exactly.
That could be book number four.
Yeah.
So let's just start right from the beginning. Where does your story begin? When and where does your love for endurance come from?
Well, one time I hiked the Appalachian Trail. Is that a drink right there?
Okay. And what year?
The first year I hiked was 2005. And I didn't grow up doing a lot of hiking or backpacking or camping, and everyone thought it was extremely random and out of the box that upon graduation I was setting off for the AT. And I really had trouble verbalizing it at the time. But now, and I touch on this in the new book, like it makes so much sense to me that I had this deep inner urge to go outdoors and move. And growing up in North Carolina, the Appalachian Trail is something I'd ever always heard about. So that became my adventure. But I just started, for me at first, it was this micro thing. Like, why do I hear this inner voice? And then when I started examining it in like this macro sense of like, well, since the beginning of time, men and women have been outdoor movers. Like that is how we've evolved. We've been nomadic and hunters and gatherers and working in fields for tens of thousands of years until like 50 years ago or 100 years ago, you know? Yeah. So I think if that's how we've evolved, a lot of people have this need, voice, urge to go outdoors and use their body. And I think long trails are still really good for that. And so when you find it, a lot of people find that deep connection. And I was no different. I got to the end and all the trite ways you always hear, like the trail had changed my life, but it didn't feel trite. It was very empowering and transformative, and I valued simplicity, and I learned a lot about other people. Bless you. I realized a lot of my own, like, judgments, stereotypes, mental limitations, and so left that wanting to do more with my life than I had before. And I just felt like there's so many more options. Because on the trail, I think you realize, you know, abilities and capabilities, but you're also just exposed to so many different people and options and opportunities. So I just feel like the world got a lot bigger on the AT. And one thing I wanted to do more of was hike. So. Mm-hmm.
Have you always been adept at endurance sports?
I love sports. Brew, my husband, calls me his best sports friend. So we do, I mean, for
you
me.
You do mention in the book that you guys are big time college basketball fans.
We are. Well, I grew up in North Carolina. So that is almost a, you know, you have to love college basketball if you're from North Carolina. And I think my family traditions weren't so much holidays. It was just gathering in the living room during a Tar Heel basketball game and screaming at the TV. And there was a lot of warmth and love in that, you know? So, yeah, I've always enjoyed sports and a high level of, I just think, physical performance. Like, to me, that's excellence in an art form, just like, you know, music or painting or anything else. It's trying to train your body to do something really difficult and beautiful. So I played tennis and basketball growing up, and those were my main sports. But I enjoy watching or hearing about or learning about most any sport.
Were you a high level athlete at, what was this, high school? When you say growing up, do you mean high school or?
I played Division I tennis at a small college. I mean, it was a small Division I school, and we won our conference and went to the NCAA tournament and didn't make it very far. But yeah, I could have gotten a college scholarship in either like a small D1 school for tennis or basketball, probably.
Have you always been very competitive?
Oh, that's a good question. I have two older brothers, uh-huh. and so I just feel like we were always competitive with each other, but it was fun. I don't feel like I'm an angry competitor. I don't get super bummed out if I lose or if, like, the Tar Heels lose. It doesn't ruin my day. My husband, it, like, ruins the week, yeah. you know?
I'm probably more in line with that, unfortunately.
Yeah, like, when we lost the national championship, I think, 3 years ago. And granted, we won, not this year, but the year before. But the year before that, we, like, lost on a last-minute shot. And he wouldn't talk to anyone for, like, a day.
I know that.
Yeah. But, I mean, when Brew and I were dating, like, that was just fun for us. Like, I feel like we were really competitive with each other and just fun, like, trash-talking type of ways. Whether it was, like, cooking a meal or playing basketball or going for a run. And
yeah.
So I think, you know, I would say I'm competitive, hopefully in a healthy sense.
Nice.
I'm not healthy. We also have a We also have a shared enemy in Duke.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, they beat us in the championship game 2-3 years ago.
Yeah.
Time's hard.
Plus it's just like Duke, you know?
Right, exactly. Good every year. They get the top recruits every single year. And it's
that's not where I was going with it, but that's fine.
Yeah, that too. Sure, Zach.
Are we talking about the lacrosse?
No.
Just in general.
Just Duke. You
just
know.
Duke. Okay.
I think I said enough, yeah, Zach.
There are probably conversations happening in North Carolina that I need to be privy to.
Yeah. No, it's, I mean, but like anywhere, like some of my very favorite people went to Duke, but that doesn't mean I like it. That doesn't mean you totally have to like it.
Totally.
You know.
I get that. So I do want to jump into the book. We're going to have a lot of book questions here. We'll get some more general questions. But so in the beginning part of the book, you mentioned Owen Allen, that he was part of a duo to be the first to hike the AT in under 100 days. And he said in his journal, and you paraphrase it well, "I'm glad I did it, but I don't ever want to do it that way again." Do you feel the same way about hiking the trail in an FKT endeavor?
Well, I do now about the Appalachian Trail, mm-hmm. but you know, when I set the overall record on the Appalachian Trail, that was my third FKT attempt. So, you know, I had it in my system beforehand. But at this point, I don't want to do the Appalachian Trail again that way. And not because I just think I found the answer I needed. Like, I was looking for something pretty specific, and I went out there and found it. And so I don't have that. I had this deep passion and desire and curiosity and this huge drive to train and go and do it. And I think once the question was answered, that just, it went away. Mm-hmm. So part of me feels like it'd be nice because I'm just like momming it hard and working hard, and I don't do much with endurance sports at this point. And I'm like, you know, maybe it'd be nice someday on a shorter trail, like 200, 300 mile trail, to just like sort of reclaim that, you know, that feeling, to kind of remember what I went through back on the Appalachian Trail. But as far as like serious pursuits, I think it's out of my system.
Yeah.
You set another record for a trail in Australia too, right?
Oh yeah. I didn't even count that. Yeah.
That one doesn't count. It's just a smaller record.
Well, let me be very honest with you. When I got in this ball game, women weren't doing it, first of all. So basically any trail I wanted to like try to push my limits a little bit, usually I could set a women's record. And then that trail in Australia was less than 10 years old, so it was a very new trail. And even like the long trail had a pretty stout supported record, but the unsupported one had been set by my friend Warren decades before. So I mean, FKTs have ramped up a ton just within the past like 5 years, mm-hmm. right? So it was there's a big difference in FKTs. Like, yeah. I could go set an FKT tomorrow and I'm horribly out of shape, you know? There's just trails where there's no record or there's a soft record or, you know, if you distinguish it enough to, I went this direction in this season as a female over this age, right. Like anyone can set an FKT.
Yeah, there's enough categories.
Right, which yeah. I kind of get into in the book. I'm like, come on. Like, yeah. You know, we don't need all these. There are also, then that said, some FKTs that are extremely, extremely challenging mm-hmm. and difficult and are, yeah, very hard to surpass.
Yeah, because you had set the women's one in 2008 on the Appalachian Trail, right?
Yeah, I like to say I established the women's record.
Oh, okay.
Again.
What's the difference?
Like, no one had really tried for it. Okay. So there was a woman who had hiked the trail in just under 100 days with her husband. And they were trying to, it was actually Ray Jardine and his wife. I don't know if you know of Ray Jardine. He was yeah. like the godfather of ultralight right. backpacking. So I think they did it in like 98 or 99 days. But they were mainly showing like, you can do it with ultralight gear. You can do it very quickly. Here's a new way to experience the trail. And they did it together. And I don't think the intention was to set a record.
Yeah. Just their stuff was so light that it happened on accident.
Yeah. So the women's record was like someone lofting a softball up. It was like, just finish with support and don't get hurt.
Yeah.
And probably that's going to be good enough.
I mean, still 57 days is an insane feat. I mean, maybe in the FKT world, you probably have a different perspective on that. But like, as someone that hiked the traditional AT hike, 57 days is baffling.
Yeah.
Anything I think under like the 4 month mark to me seems baffling, but
yeah. But I think that was the problem as I did that and realized the whole time, like my goal had been to establish this women's record. And right. I assumed there were two categories. There was a men's record and a women's record. And then when I really felt the reality of 40 miles a day and experienced what hiking the trail in about 2 months felt like, that was what made me realize I don't think there's a gender distinction. It has nothing to do with how fast you can run, how big your muscles are. And I'm really frustrated at myself for having these preconceived notions of what women could do versus men. Because I hate feeling put down or limited based on gender off trail, right? Mm. That's no fun. And then I just done it to myself. So then that kind of ate at me for a while.
Yeah. So I'm going to jump around based on what we've got in the show notes here. But so you have a conversation with a professor of sports exercise. I forget. It's Sean.
Oh, Sean is the physiologist. Yeah, the expert physiologist.
Yeah. And this is a conversation you're having with him after you had set the FKT about it sounded like you were basically trying to answer your own questions or I guess prove your own hypotheses.
Yeah.
That not only women weren't at a disadvantage for long FKTs, but maybe that there was even an advantage right. to it. And that he took kind of a soft approach to saying yeah. maybe. It's like there's individual yeah. variance, but certainly that there's no disadvantage to it.
Yeah.
But when you set the FKT, you were the first woman to break an FKT longer than I think you wrote about it. It was the long trail. A woman had set the yeah. long trail record. Mm-hmm. But aside from that, and the long trail's 270 some miles, yeah. right? Aside from that, no woman had ever established an overall FKT. So you were dealing with, like you said, a lot of preconceived notions about what women could do. The fact that there were two separate categories, like you kind of were the first person to demolish that. So in a lot of ways, and I think this goes to why you're such a, you know, a popular figure in the community, it was like what you did was very groundbreaking.
Yeah, and someone was going to do it eventually. But it is interesting. There's still a ton of like, it's all gotten better, so I don't want to sound bitter about it, but there is a lot of like sexism out there still with traditional thru hiking or FKTs, you know, and there's a guy, and again, part of this is like FKTs are more high profile than when I did it, but there's a guy out there trying now and he's already gotten like national media within 2 weeks. And I was like, no one was going to interview me until I finished. Like, no one thought I had a shot at it. Like, no one would have given me a chance. And like, the guy doing it now, he has a really stout ultra running resume. But again, I think that's where people are really off with this sport is like, it's not a 100-mile race. Like, yeah. Give me a thru hiker with like 10, 15, 20,000 miles, and I'm going to take them pretty darn seriously, right. You know? Right. So I think there's still just a lot of misunderstanding. And I definitely come from it. Or at it from more of the long distance hiking background. But I have done ultra marathons, and I just think it's more valuable to have a through hike under your belt than trail races.
Yeah. It is. I mean, I haven't done any, I've run a couple of road marathons. So I don't have really a basis of comparison, but a through hike is such an individual beast that I can't imagine the translation of like a 2 day race and compared to a 2 month
exactly.
through hike is like yeah. just a world of difference.
Yep.
And just, I think a point to exemplify that was, you know, the person that broke your record, Scott Jurek, was probably the most accomplished ultra athlete of all time. And he had to put every last drop into breaking it by
like 3 hours.
Yeah.
Right?
It was a couple of hours. So I think that's a huge testament to your point is that, he's one of the most accomplished ultra athletes of all time, but he didn't have that through hiking resume.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Religion.
Okay.
In the chapter where you profile David Horton, there's a story about 500 pounds of metal coming crashing down atop his left leg. And as he was pinned down, this is the quote that you've got in the book. "Lord, thank you for letting this happen. I wish it hadn't, but I know I'll learn something." Before I get to the actual question, holy shit.
I know.
Like what a perspective.
I know.
And obviously this was in the context of the role that religion played in his endurance pursuits. I'm curious how religion has played a role in your endurance pursuits.
Yes. One thing I like about the book, well, first of all, just the fact that people were so vulnerable and open and willing to talk about things like relationships or divorces or tragedies or losses or faith or higher purpose or beliefs that really made them who they are and propel them onward, you know? And so it's interesting because not everyone in the book identifies with traditional faith or religion or organized religion, but everyone, one of the few commonalities I found in the individuals in the book is everyone had faith that things can get better. Like there is like this eternal sense of optimism within people who are, who excel at endurance. Mm-hmm. And I think that
do they see it as a higher power or just a stern belief that the situation will improve?
Well, that's where it breaks down. Okay. Both. So a couple people in the book, I mean, David Horton and I both openly, you know, profess to be Christians. And even within that, our faith is very different. Mm-hmm. But I think both of us say, I think one place we feel the same is we feel like our bodies are a gift. And we want to use those gifts and we want to encourage other people to be healthy and get outside and use their bodies. And I think when you see your talents as a gift and, you know, from a biblical perspective too, then there's this expectation that you use it. Mm-hmm. Like you don't say, oh, I've realized something special, some talent I have, and then not do anything with it. So there's almost this responsibility to an awareness or an awakening inside of you of something like unique that you're passionate about. Mm-hmm. And then I feel like for me, the faith just has been something that's kept me going. Like, I don't know. For me, I mean, I say this, like, through hikers, they all talk out loud, right? So either they're talking to themselves or, you know, to the environment or to God or we're all talking to someone, right? Yeah. And so I feel like it's really powerful for me to feel like every hike that I've gone on, I felt more connected to my God and my faith and my religion because of the time and the vulnerability. And I always say this, like my two most meaningful hikes are my first AT and last AT because they were the hardest and they made me like give the most. Like I felt empty getting to the end of the trail. But because of that, there was like, I think the ability to take more in, you know? So very transcendent spiritual experiences for me. I'm just grateful more than like, I never went out there thinking God wants me to set an FKT. God is going to let me do this. God wants me to be Andrew Thompson. Like that was not, I mean, God wants the Tar Heels to beat Duke clearly. But besides that, I don't get into that psychological mindset. I'm just like, I'm so grateful that like I get to be in this creation that I think is really beautiful. And I have this faith that allows me to talk to a creator and value what I see and value people. And that's my worldview. And there's a lot of power in it. So yeah, it was a really important part of my experience.
Yeah.
One thing we had talked about before the show, which hopefully is still relevant in this part of the conversation, but we were saying, you know, to touch on you saying that, you know, our bodies are kind of a gift, and when you realize you have something talented about you or about your body that you can use, that you should go and use it, we were mentioning how you had talked about how you hit 6 foot when you were only in eighth grade. Yeah. Did you realize that early, that, like, wow, this is kind of a gift in certain aspects, like,
no, did it take a while for you to accept that?
Yeah. I was like, when did that hit? Absolutely that it was like, hey, this not. Can help me do cool things.
No, I was a foot taller than everyone else. And I hate, like, middle school boys are the worst, yeah. You know, they're all like, you're tall. And I'm like, I know, like, don't tell me every time I walk down the hall.
I was fat, so I know that kind of too.
Yeah. So I had the braces and the t-shirt and the Umbros, and no, I, you know, I mean, it wasn't the worst thing ever, but I did not embrace being a foot taller than everyone else in eighth grade. And I think, you know, one of the things I really appreciate about the people in this book and in this sport, though, it's because a lot of them didn't grow up as athletes, and there is no, like, there's no youth league for FKTs, right? It's not baseball. So the journeys to get there are so different and random and inspiring. And so many people in the book struggled with weight or insecurity, or they were bullied in high school, or they weren't good enough for the sports team they wanted to be on. And so I think it's this really powerful story of, you know, them saying, well, despite the fact that I'm not fitting the societal mold of what an athlete does or what an athlete looks like, I still know my body has potential. I still recognize these gifts, and I'm going to find an outlet. And for a lot of these people, then the trail has been an outlet for them to express themselves and their physicality. And I just think that's really beautiful and awesome, because not everyone, you know, I'm not going to be an Olympic gymnast. I'm not. I wish I could. But man, like, when I hike, I feel so good about my body.
Yeah.
And I think most people can feel good about their body on a trail.
Mm-hmm. It's actually a perfect segue, because again, in David Horton's, in the chapter about David Horton, he talks about insecurity and the role that that plays in the drive for endurance. Do you think, because obviously for this book, you did a lot of research profiling, you know, outlier endurance athletes. Do you think David is an outlier in this regard, and the fact that the insecurity is a fuel that drives him?
You know, based off my first few interviews, I actually thought insecurity was going to be a commonality between the characters in the book. And then on the back end, it just kind of swung. And I felt like people were a lot more confident in who they were, and didn't have the same level of insecurities. But I think it's nice, because everyone, regardless of whether it's insecurity or defining their own path or overcoming gender barriers or mental limitations, like, everyone has to tap into an inner voice in here. Like, everyone has to go deep within themselves, because there's all these external voices and there's noise and there's, this is what has happened. And there's some deep-seated belief in every individual in this book that they can do something that those voices and the noise and the majority of things they hear says that they cannot do. Mm-hmm. You know, so everyone in this book is a dark horse. Like, I don't know. I think even Scott Jurek, like, you know, he went into the trail, I think, overconfident, maybe really thinking he could set the record without much trouble. But then the reality, I mean, that's just Appalachian Trail regardless, or any long trail. Like, it's just humbling, totally. You know? And when you're putting, like, I started thinking I had a shot at the record and knowing I would probably fail, because I'm like, gosh, what could go wrong when you're trying to do 47 miles a day for 46 days? Like, everything, right? So it's like the odds are against you from the beginning. I don't care who you are. Totally. And it's neat that you try something that you're probably going to fail at.
Yeah.
So one of the techniques you recommend in the Psychology of Endurance chapter is the use of mantras. Why is this important? And what would you say your go-to mantra is?
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting having the chapter on psychology, because it really put a lot of skills that every hiker uses into sort of more formal terms. So I think most hikers out there, whether it's a mantra or something that just gets stuck in your head for hundreds of miles and you can't shake it, I think the value of it is twofold. One, there's a simplicity to having something stuck in your head and we all hate it, right? But it is like the trail's a very simple place, and it's a place where I think sometimes self-doubt or insecurity or circumstances, especially if it's been bad weather, you're in Pennsylvania or whatever it is, it seems overwhelming. And the value of a mantra is it's kind of grounding in its simplicity, or it like roots you back into this one place or one saying or one song or whatever it is. So I do like the simplicity of it. And then I think if you can have a few phrases that you really own and embody, like that's powerful, you know. And when I was doing the record, I think I would say my mantra has changed for sure over time, but when I was doing the record, no one thought I had a shot because of my gender, because I was hiking and not running, and again, my experience suggested otherwise. So when those voices got too loud of like, what are you doing? You're crazy. You're a narcissist. You can't do this. Oh, and the you don't appreciate the trail, which we haven't even gotten there yet. Yeah. But, you know, the one thing I would say is, well, I belong. Like, I belong. Like, I love this trail and I know what I can do and I belong. So that was a mantra that summer.
So people would tell you that you didn't appreciate the trail?
Oh, yeah.
Because you were going
people
for the
still
record?
Tell me that even all
your,
the time.
Even on your third hike of it?
Yes. I hate the trail. That's why I've done it three times.
Yeah. I mean, even Jabba and I got that when we hiked the PCT. We didn't do it anywhere close. We did it 100 days. Which
is there
still
like they're against people going fast?
I think their viewpoint is that if you go at a certain speed, you can't actually appreciate, like you're not stopping to smell the roses. This is almost always exclusively from people that haven't done huge sections of the trail. It seems like people who are, you never hear this from thru hikers, at least right. in my perception, because they know like, mm-hmm. The way, oh, I don't want to, I'd rather our guests talk
about
this.
About
yeah. But I mean, that's just my perception of that critique is usually from people that, you know, at best they get, to go out for an extended weekend or maybe a week at a time. They're not out there for thousands of miles.
Right. Well, yeah, I still get it. And I haven't hiked fast or long or far in like 7 years, and I still get it. But that's where I think people are taking such a small sample size when they look at, oh, well, you set a record on the Appalachian Trail. And I'm like, yeah, and I've hiked more slow miles than you ever have. Like I have a 1-year-old and a 5-year-old. And I do feel really strongly that there's not a right way or a better way to do the trail. Like I don't think a record's better than a thru hike, better than taking kids out there, better than a section hike over years or decades. Like I don't think one way is better than the other, but that's kind of the point. It's like, this stuff is subjective, y'all. Like, you can't tell me I didn't appreciate it, didn't enjoy my experience, didn't find something valuable, didn't have a transformative journey. Like, that's kind of up for me to get to decide and say, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
That, I mean, yes, that's the, I think, the appropriate response is, I mean, it goes back to, like, the oldest saying in the thru-hiking community is hike your own hike.
Which no one means when they say it.
Yeah, right.
Like, in the South, we have the, like, God bless her heart. I'm yeah. like, yeah, that's, like, hike your own hike. Like, say a cutting insult and then cover it yeah. with H-Y-O-H. Yeah. You'll yeah. be fine.
Are you familiar with Courtney Dolwalter? I think I'm pronouncing her name. So she, there's a race in Moab last year. It's the first... the inaugural year. It's 250 miles. And I think they had like 100 high level ultra runners participate in it. And she won outright by like 12 hours rather.
Yeah.
I interviewed her last year and I was picking her brain about like, I was curious mentally what made her tick. And the one thing what blew me away is how ordinary she is. Like yeah. she's not particular about her yep. diet.
Yeah.
She can get away with almost no sleep. Like yep. She's just, you would meet her and not think that she's supernatural, which yeah. she basically is. But the one thing that she highlighted is her use of mantras. Mm. That's the one thing that keeps her going when, you know, otherwise I think other people might go crazy. So mm-hmm. it's interesting that that was something that you highlighted in Pursuit of Endurance as well.
Yeah. Well, again, and I think like you just think about a thru hike or a long trail, like you will get something stuck in your head. So get ahead of the curve, like sure. put some good things yeah, in there, totally, you know, totally. Or else some bad joke that someone says in Virginia is going to last till Maine. Yeah. So just like pregame that, right. you know?
Right. I do want to veer a little bit. I know I've got a bunch of prepared questions, but it's just now dawning on me that we are three people sitting in a room, three thru-hikers that all selected our own trail names. Does that make us neurotic?
I didn't select mine. I rejected mine.
I feel the same way. I like vetoed a lot.
Yeah, I was like, just call me by my actual name. I'm good.
Yeah.
And there's, I've noticed like AWOL Mm-hmm. Another person, Heather Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems, because, and I think we are in the minority of hikers that do select their own trail names. So I'm wondering if there's a personality thread type, or if it's just, if that's just coincidence.
Yeah, it's kind of like the mantra thing. It's like, well, I went into the trail very open to other trail names, and then I was like, these suck. Like, you guys are really bad at giving me a trail name. I'm better at this than you are, you know?
What were the other trail names?
Oh, my first three suggestions were Sasquatch, Stretch, and Amazon. And all the old
ones. I can't imagine why you would want those.
I was like, oh my gosh, all the old ones from middle school were just ripped open. So I got the suggestion Odysseus, and that's when I was like, you know, sort of sassy and like, well, I'm proud to be a single female. So I just changed it to Odyssa. And then went with that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right. So bringing it back to the book, there's a quote. When I couldn't affect my environment or circumstances on the trail, I seized one thing I could control, my response. I think not only obviously is this a great lesson for endurance pursuits through hiking, FKTing, but this is just a great lesson for life because, you know, there are things that we can control. There's more things that we can't control. And you really set yourself up for success by being in control of the one thing. And probably the most powerful thing of all of these is the way you handle these situations.
Yeah. It's funny because I used to need the trail to teach me that. Like every time I went to the trail, that is the lesson I had to relearn every time. And then I had kids. And I'm like, oh yeah, no, that I'm good with that. Like that is like ingrained in my body. And it's funny because now, and I don't know how far you made it in the book, but at the end, I kind of say, you know I couldn't go for an AT record now because I'm a mom. And in some ways, physically and emotionally, I think I'm better suited. Like I'm a lot more adaptable. I'm better at sleep deprivation. Like a lot of the tools you need for that FKT are just more within my nature at this point. But because I have people in my life who need me and who I value more than my own needs and myself, like I don't have what it takes to set an FKT. And I know that emotionally. Like I wouldn't be thinking about my calories or miles or what I need. I would just be thinking about people off trail who need me, even if they get older. I don't think it'll change that much. So right. It's just interesting that like in some ways, the tools I think are better refined. And then I also psychologically don't feel like I could do something like that again.
Yeah. I thought that was a really interesting point that you brought up in the book is that it's difficult for women as mothers because biologically they're hardwired to be selfless.
Yeah.
And that to through hike is a selfish endeavor.
Yeah.
But that it was almost an advantage before you had your kids. Yeah,
it was. It totally was. And if you look at my resume, like look at FKT resumes, look at the other people who have trail records. They have failed. They have failed multiple times. They tried for that stuff time and time and again. Like everyone I interviewed, I'm like, why did it take you 4 times to set this record? And I think being a female, like I was on a timeline. Like I wanted a family and I wanted kids. And I knew like even going after the record, there was a substantial amount of time where I didn't think I could set the record at all. Like, you know, out of sight, not a shot, not a chance. And that's where the other people quit. And for me, it was like, well, I'm going to get to the end because I want to know what I can do. I want to know what my best is. I'm going to go have babies so I don't get another shot, you know? So I think, yeah, again, like psychologically beforehand, it was really helpful and helped me kind of not give up in a way that I think some of the guys were willing to who knew they got multiple shots at it.
Totally.
It's funny to me that you talked about like how you could control your response and how that was like one of the things that you know, you'd think about because, and it's so funny that ties in this way. When I had joined my sorority in college, which is like the most random thing to tie together.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see where this is going.
I know. Is this a drink? What is this?
Well, so they had like given us some things that like, you know, like just learn this, you know? And one of the things they gave us to learn was a quote by Charles Swindoll, which is this quote called Attitude. Mm-hmm. And it would talk about, you know, the longer I live, the more I realize my impact on attitude, the impact of attitude on life. And we memorized the whole quote. And there were parts of the trail that were really like, you know, I was pissed off and, you know, I just wanted to be in a crummy mood all day. And there was one part of the quote that was just, you know, life is 10% what happens to you and 90% how you react to it. And whenever really shitty stuff would happen, that was kind of like what I would keep telling myself. And it was like, it's so weird that the sorority is coming back in this manner. But it's funny to see that other people had the same response, like your reaction to things and how
Yeah.
You know, that can change it.
Well, you know, I think personally, it's also like, we're going to die someday. There's no guarantee. Like, this is life. This is amazing. It is a gift. And look how beautiful it is outside. And if, I mean, I understand people get down, but as much as possible, like, there's so much positive, even with all the political stuff. And that's why I think it's good and healthy to kind of go outdoors and tune a lot of it out, because you just have to keep like your priorities in check and realize that the reality of nature and the trail is probably more real than the news at night, you know? But I do think, to your point, which again came up with everyone I interviewed in the book, and maybe most of all with Scott Williamson, who, you know, everyone in the book was wonderful, but I was so psyched to get to talk to Scott Williamson. I felt like he exudes so much wisdom.
His story is worth the price of admission for that book alone.
I know.
Incredible. Like, my jaw hit the ground.
I know.
I don't want to spoil anything. Buy the book, but it is incredible.
I totally agree. And, but that's the thing, because he had all, I mean, you want to talk about a litany of things that can go wrong. That's his life. Like, oh my gosh, like, he's been through all this hardship, and yet he will look you in the face and say, well, he also said one of the reasons he doesn't do interviews is because he's like, everyone makes it sound like I'm running away or I'm accomplishing these things because of my past. And that's not it. Like, that's not it at all. I love to hike. I love to be outdoors. And I'm not going to let what's happened to me in the past keep me from doing what I love. But it's not escapism, you know? Like, right. And I think that's a really powerful point of, he's not a victim to his circumstances or his past or his upbringing. He is someone who has found a way to be positive, focus on the positive, live life to the fullest, use his body to the fullest, and just really create his own path that he can be happy with, you know? And he, yeah, I feel like we could all learn a lot from Scott Williamson.
And you talked earlier about how a lot of the people that accomplished FKTs had failed a bunch of times. He's probably the prime example.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Not only the FKTs, but his the amount of attempts it took for him to be the first person to yo-yo the PCT. Yeah. I don't know if anyone's done it since, but
I think they have. Okay. I think there have been more yo-yos. But the amazing thing is talking to Scott, how nonchalant the word fail is for him. Uh-huh. Like, yeah, I failed and I failed. Other people, it's just seething for them. They're like, oh, I didn't do it. Ah, right. You know? But a really great example is he never graduated from high school. He hiked the Pacific Crest Trail at 18, Continental Divide Trail at 19. And this is like 25 years ago when no one was doing it. So the year he did it, there was only one other completer and they were going in opposite directions. Okay. And so then he's 20 and he goes to the East Coast to hike the AT, but he starts at the southern tip of Florida, does the Florida Trail, walks on highways, hits the Appalachian Trail at Springer, goes up to Katahdin, is continuing towards Maine. And he stopped like 20 miles south of the border by a commercial logging operation. And they're like, I'm sorry, you're on private land. You can't keep going. So Scott Williamson says, okay. And he goes back home to California. Hmm. And that drives me crazy. I am like, Scott, like, you go ninja, like, you make it to that border.
That's and, the Warren Doyle in you talking right now, right?
Well, just the, like, you started at the tip of Florida, like, right. You're almost there. And he goes, well, like, my whole objective was to hike until I couldn't go any further. So what's the difference between an invisible boundary and people telling me to stop? You know, he's so good about going until it's just whatever stops him. And then he thinks, well, that's a lesson. And I know something more for next time. And I had this great experience. And I think he really has very little ego and veil. And he also views failure in maybe the healthiest way that I've ever witnessed.
Yeah. I think the way that he shuns all media attention is just like the perfect example of how little ego he has, because he does all this and he doesn't want any attention from it.
Uh-uh.
Yeah.
Can I quickly share the story of why I got to interview Scott Williamson?
Please.
Okay. Because, okay, he hadn't given an interview. Like, people don't know who he is unless you're on the PCT or whatever. Right. But I think he's probably the most versatile or skilled long-distance backpacker. And he's also a mountaineer, like, in the country. But he hasn't done an interview since 2003 because he felt – and, you know, everyone in this book, whenever I read about them and outside or backpacker. It always kind of ticked me off because I know a lot of them pretty well. And I think it's a disservice to make them seem larger than life. Mm. I'm like, these are human people and they have flaws and vulnerabilities. And if you can't tell their whole story, you're taking away their relatability. And I think that's what makes them powerful.
Sure.
So, but with Scott, you know, him saying like everyone makes it seem like I'm running away. They're exploiting my tragedy. I don't make my, you know, living doing this. Why do I even care if people write about me? So it's just like no interviews. But when I hiked the PCT in 2006, I was in the Cascades coming out of a really bad storm and he was headed up into it. And I was about to hit a road and have a resupply. And we both figured the storm was going to throw him off his itinerary. And this was for his second yo-yo. Mm-hmm. So he'd hit Canada and he's turning around. So I took off my pack and dug inside and gave him like 3 energy bars. And 12 years later, those energy bars got me an interview with Scott Williamson.
You saying that you were a lot closer to town than he was.
Which I think is an amazing story because it's like, A, be kind, and B, hikers never forget food.
Right.
Like that was so 12 years ago. And I could be, do you remember in the Cascades when this random woman gave you like 3 Clif bars? Yeah. And he's like, okay, you can interview me. You know?
That must be so frustrating for everyone that's tried to interview him in the past 15 years and got to know. And it's like, well, what does it take?
Yeah.
3 Clif bars.
Yeah.
Jinx.
Yeah.
No, that is funny. I can probably recall every trail magic session I've ever gotten.
Yeah, like, I know.
It's amazing. Okay, so there's a quote in the book that I think serves as a really, another quote that serves as really good, just overall life advice. And that is, I might not sign up for another task as ambitious and all-consuming as a trail record, but holding my concentration for 46 days reminds me that I can do small things well. Mm-hmm. So I think what you were going for here is not necessarily the way that I interpreted this quote. And maybe I've got the author here, so correct me if I'm wrong. But so when you wrote about it, you're talking about concentration specifically. But to me, I think what's valuable about a thru hike and what you're saying here is the contrast of doing very difficult things versus getting through something, you know, that might seem difficult in your everyday life, like an ordinary task. Am I off base?
Totally. But that's what I love about books. It's like, that's why I don't want pictures in there. I'm like, what you just got from there is like, perfect. I don't know what he's saying, but it's probably not what I meant when I read it.
I mean, because for me personally, that I think is probably the most valuable aspect of a thru hike is that, you know, I was raised in a middle income, like I never struggled my entire life. And then like, as you were saying, thru hiking is the ultimate humbling endeavor. And then everything that I think would have given me stress in my life prior to my thru hike doesn't have the same impact on me.
Yeah. So well, I did try to say that in other places. Okay. So I'm glad.
Maybe I pulled the wrong quote then. Maybe I pulled the wrong quote. So,
but I just, everyone I interviewed, I said, have your biggest like pains, obstacles, hardships happened on trail or off? And everyone says off, but then they all follow it up in some way. They personalize it, but they say, but what I've gone through on trail, like what I experienced, you know, hiking or trail running or setting an FKT has allowed me to better navigate the challenges and obstacles off trail. So I do think, and a lot of that's perspective, you know, and a lot of it's realizing you're more resilient than you might think. But no, when I was writing the one about concentration, it was like, and by the way, when I wrote this book, I was like nursing or pregnant the whole time. So, and I had a 3/4-year-old. And so when I was writing the concentration thing, I was like, I focused on hiking for 46 days. And it was so simplistic and I was so present. And now I cannot make a cup of coffee without being interrupted or have a notification go off on my phone or my daughter's crying in the bathroom because her butt needs to be wiped. Like, I can't make a cup of coffee, you know? Like, that was the more like, I want to, and it does, it kind of bothers my husband now, but I got through this writing process and realizing a lot of this stuff, I was like, I'm going to finish a task before I do the next thing because we're so constantly interrupted. And so still my life is filled with voices and notifications and interruptions. And I always just say, well, 1 minute and finish what I'm doing and then go on to the next thing. And so the writing and the trail is one thing that sort of helped me with that.
So one point during your FKT, there was a fellow hiker that asked you if you were even having fun. And your response was, no, I'm not having fun, but I think this might be better than fun.
Yeah, it was a little bit more animated. I was like hangry. And so again, like That is exactly what I said, and I don't know if it would have been the same response if it was earlier in the day or if it wasn't on Pennsylvania Rocks. Yeah. Or, you know, timing, like, timing was everything. It was already, like, dark. I had done my 45. It's totally rocky. When he asked it, he, like, blinded me with his headlamp, you know. So there were moments of fun that summer. Yeah. There were actually, like, very lighthearted instances that summer. On the other hand, it was the most challenging thing I had ever done. And I realized that there was something, I mean, there's something just joyful about it. Like, there's something very painful about it too. But I knew, I had this like recognition that I was living my dream. And I had overcome, not at the end, not setting the record. That was not the dream. It's funny, but that was not the dream. But like I had to put so much in to get to the trail that summer. And I had like, you know, thinking and doing it on the Appalachian Trail, which did change my life when I was so young, and going through these same places where I saw a dead body, you know, where I had these like very powerful life lessons as a young woman. And then coming back to this place and just thinking about the thousands of miles that had brought me back to that place and being able to share it with my husband, you know, like who, and we were a total team that summer. And, yeah, it just, there was this joy, like there was this, and knowing how like no one believed in me, like no one believed, everyone thought I was crazy. And then I was just out there doing it.
Did that help you that no one believed in you? Was that a chip on your shoulder?
No, I was lucky. I was so lucky with FKTs because I started before pro boards, before GPS, really before social media was like the big thing it is now. We didn't have smartphones. I mean, we didn't even have a we were using maps and gazetteers. And if I got to a road crossing and Brew wasn't there, I would tear off a piece of like neon colored surveyor's tape and write him a note with a Sharpie and leave it on a branch. And that is how high tech we were, yeah, you know? So I don't know. I think it's now a lot harder to be totally removed on these attempts, yeah. But I think before we set foot on the trail, the voices were really loud because gotcha. I had access to, you know, computers and phones. And then after that, I didn't have internet. Right. I didn't. Yeah. I didn't open a computer and I didn't have it on my phone. So it's just out there then.
Interesting. Very liberating.
Yeah.
So in your answer, you just mentioned that you and Brew were a team. Again, the segue is perfectly because so when I first opened the book, I was thinking this was going to be a how-to about how to pursue an FKT or something along those lines. and then quickly I discovered that
would sell 5 copies. Yeah,
Zach loves how-to books.
To be honest with you, I would have really enjoyed that. I mean, I enjoyed the book as is, but I would have bought that book too.
Jack.
And then quickly I discovered that it was a profile of these, you know, phenomenal endurance athletes. And just, yeah, I think you kind of highlight how they all arrive to a similar destination in very different ways. Mm-hmm. And that there's not, you know, a one size fits all approach to this. But the more I read it, I realized that that's not even really what the book is about. This is a book about relationships. Behind every phenomenal person, there's a person in the shadows that makes that possible. One, I'm curious why you decided to take that angle for this book, because like obviously that's not the first thing that someone's going to think when they open this book. And two, I'm curious how Brew played a role in your conquests.
I didn't take that angle. Oh. I honestly did not take that angle. Like that surprised me too. And I haven't even put it together in the words you just used until right now. But I did see like doing these interviews, because again, I think a lot of people view these personalities as recluses, you know, or people who are an extremely independent breed or very self-sufficient and don't need a tribe or community or assistance or support. Especially there's, you know, I think probably half the book is supported records and then half are self-supported out there on their own. But just every time I interviewed someone, and this is the beautiful thing, it's like I was in almost all of them, I was in their homes, you know, I was a part of their family. And it just, and it was so interesting because a lot of times the person, the athlete I was interviewing, couldn't really verbalize the story the way their loved one could, you know? And it really, I feel like was clarifying to have both perspectives. And everyone, when I got to the end, I know for certain when I finished the Appalachian Trail in 46 days, I think the most immediate reward was like knowing that I had just done something that I could have never done on my own. and then sharing that like with the person who I love the most. And that was like, I can't think of many other things in life that I really couldn't have done, you know, especially without that type of level of assistance. And so you just saw it time and again. And again, even if it was self-supported, that person at home, it's almost, I think it's easier in some ways for the support person to be on trail with a loved one. Hmm. But like the person at home is just like struggling because they know how much, you know, their partner is struggling and they can't do anything about it.
Right.
And again, within the book, these aren't all like fairy tale love stories. Like yeah. there's, you know, divorces and things happen, but
when you even mentioned Andrew Thompson, who's not even like a romantic partner, but you do write about how like his partner played a huge role in his FKT.
Oh my gosh. Yes. JB.
Yeah.
That was amazing. That might be the best love story in the whole book, quite frankly. Yes. His best friend helped him four stinking times to try to set that record before they did it. So, I think these people, I mean, I know personally I'm introverted, like, but relationships mean a lot to me. And I think most of the people in the book just surround themselves with a couple people who understand them really well. Because what an FKT, I know this because I go and, you know, talk about it all the time, but most people still don't get it. Mm-hmm. And even after reading the book, hopefully they'll get it more, but I don't think you really get it. And when you find someone who gets you and gets what you're doing, like that's such a valuable thing. And then, I mean, this sort of circles back to faith, but in our belief, like as Christians, the word to love is actually to know, like to know someone. And I just think that's really cherished in this sense of like, not just setting a record, but like, you know, that something unique about this person connects to going out into the wilderness and like hiking or running without abandon and doing it for days or weeks at end. And thru hiking is countercultural enough. And then you take it a step farther to FKTs and you have someone who loves you because of that or in spite of that, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think it's just these people in the book really value relationships.
Yeah. And so I haven't met too many of the personalities in the book. I've met Anish, but I've had the opportunity to interact with both Scott and Jenny. Uh-huh. And you hit the nail on the head. Like they yeah. are the perfect team.
Yeah.
And just the way that you identify her role in what they've done is it's spot on. So it goes to a testament that I imagine that you hit a bullseye with all those relationships.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny because Scott Jurek, I mean, Jenny, his wife, Scott Jurek was my hardest interview because he had done so many other interviews and he had the least amount of time and there's so much written about him already. And I had a different perspective on his FKT accomplishment, but I couldn't get under the surface until I interviewed Jenny. And then she was like, oh, Scott, he's a dork, you know? And like, she just went on and on. And I was like, oh, now I know Scott Jurek. Now I know behind the curtain, you know? Right. And so it was hugely helpful.
Yeah. Well, cool. So that concludes the, I think, book interview portion okay. of it. We've got some more, I guess, I don't know if rapid fire, but I guess
right,
less heavy questions.
FKT fire?
yeah. You have to be the fastest to answer these. Actually, Chantal, you take this first one.
Okay. Which hurts more, the worst pain during an FKT or childbirth?
FKT. Shin splints. Hands down.
I've never had shin splints.
Well, you've never had childbirth also, either.
You don't know that.
Yeah, full disclosure, I had epidurals. And if someone had offered me an epidural on the trail, I would have been like, yes. I was like, that, please. You're amazing.
So you came from the school of Warren Doyle.
Yes.
A larger-than-life personality and a legend on the AT. He's also a proponent of a lot of things, but I think one of the things that stands out to me is not filtering water. Mm-hmm. What's your personal stance on that?
I filter when I need to. Uh-huh. I mean, I carry Sawyer Squeeze or Sawyer Mini, and if it's a questionable water source, then I have my filter and I use it. And if it's a spring or stream off a mountain above a road, livestock and development, I drink straight from it.
Perfect plug for our sponsor,
by the way. Shout out to our sponsor.
Yeah. Yay, Sawyer.
Sawyer.
during your first thru hike, you were struck by an indirect lightning strike. Is this actually what gave you your FKT superpowers?
I think so. Yeah. No, I don't know. But that certainly instilled a healthy respect for lightning. And it's funny because you always think of it out west, I think. But the only cougar I've ever seen and my only experience with like splash lightning has all come on the East Coast.
Huh. Where was the cougar encounter?
It was in Western North Carolina on the Bartram Trail, which is 100-mile trail. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Interesting. What does a lightning strike feel like?
Yeah.
You wrote about it briefly.
It feels like, well, when I was young, I was at a farm and I grabbed an electric fence. Uh-huh. And that is pretty much what it feels like. It's like a traveling, you feel the pain travel.
When I was little, my brother used to take those D batteries that had both the things on the same side and used to try to make me stick it to my tongue.
Man, brothers.
But that's right? Like the closest I can get.
Takeaway from this interview is never listen to your brother.
Never. Yeah, exactly.
Do you take any supplements, either on trail, off, both?
You know, when I did the record, I was taking a probiotic and a multivitamin and a natural anti-inflammatory. And I don't take much. I really don't take much of any kind of regimen, except like when I was pregnant and taking prenatal stuff. But I really never even do ibuprofen on the trail. And then when I got my shin splints, that's the only time where I was like, I want as much as I can get, as soon as I can get, as big as I can get. Yeah. Besides that, no, very little.
You fought through the shin splints pretty quickly, because the couple hikers that I'd known that have really suffered from shin splints, it was like a long...
Oh, no, they lasted 1,000 miles.
Oh, Jesus.
They just went down in severity after I got to Vermont.
Oof, thousand, I can't imagine 1,000 miles.
I felt them into Virginia. Oof.
Oh, yeah, that sounds me. Thoughts on longevity and endurance sports, how to avoid delay or minimize joint problems further down the road?
And I asked specifically because I think it was it David Horton who got knee replacements?
Yeah.
And I'm not entrenched in this world, but to me it seems like just an inevitable byproduct of endurance sports is probably more so running than hiking, but maybe both. Do you have any thoughts on yoga?
Supplements? I hate yoga, and I do it like 2-3 times a week because I know it makes a big difference now with my balance and alignment and flexibility and recovery. But I think things like using your poles, again, hiking is, I mean, this is when I talked with physiologists, he's like, yeah, hiking, especially downhill, it's a lot less impact on your joints and pounding as you run, you know, limiting the weight of your pack. That's another good thing to do. And I really don't know. I mean, people have different theories about this, about whether you have a set amount of chips and you just use them all up and they're gone, or whether, you know, motion and movement perpetuate and create more ability to be long lasting. I just think, listen to your body, respect your body. I mean, I'm not playing with the 60, 70, 80 year game plan, because I'm like, I don't know that I'll wake up tomorrow, and I hope that I do, and I'm not reckless, but this has always been a thing where I'm like, there's something you feel really passionate about and you really want to do it. And if you have the ability to do it now,
right,
that can be an extremely worthwhile and valuable and important experience to have. And not everyone can do that, honestly, but I don't worry. Brew worries about his body falling apart. We have different kind of mindsets, but I don't worry about it. I'm like, if it falls apart, I get a horse. Like, whatever. You know, like, you find a way to keep going.
Yeah. I imagine medical advances will be so good by then. Like, all the stuff I'm hearing with, like, stem cell injections is just the way, it's like Mel Gibson's dad is 100 years old and he couldn't walk, and he went down to Panama and got some stem cell injections, and now he says he feels like it was like he's like 60, 70 years old.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah. And just imagine what it'll be like in 5, 10.
I don't know. I do want to say, like, I see a lot of thru hikers and then they become hiker trash and they serial hike every year. And then at some point it's like they either get burnt out or don't want to do it anymore. And it's like, it's okay to take big breaks. Like it's okay to do it every year. And if that, you know, lights you up for 30 years, that's awesome. But just because you don't thru hike for a year doesn't mean you're not part of the community. It doesn't mean you're not a thru hiker. It doesn't mean you've lost something. Like, take a break, have a job, have a family, have kids.
Totally.
You still hike, you know, and you will have time to do longer trails again. Right. And I think, like, I don't know, maybe social media, maybe the track's horrible for this, but I think there's more kind of celebrity status within the current hiker community because of online resources to put your story out there. But it's like, you don't have to
participate.
Right. Or just, you don't have to keep it up forever. Like, don't let a thru hike define you.
Totally. It's valuable advice. And we can't not have a gear question in here. I'm curious what your big three for current, like, recreational backpacking trips with the family is.
With the family, so We, our friend Matt Kirk, who set a self-supported record on the AT and had a sewing machine, he made us a big tarp with bug netting.
Oh, that's nice.
So that's what we sleep under as a family. Well, I sleep under with the kids, and then Brew usually has a separate tent.
Smart man.
Yeah. And we use, I've had Western Mountaineering sleeping bags for a long time, and they last a long time. And I usually just use it as a quilt for me and the kids. And then pack. I had, so when I came on the scene, I feel like girls' packs, women's packs, they were just a joke. You know, they, there was no real thought put into them. And I'm 6 feet tall again. So it just was like, if you're not 5'6" and an average body shape, like the women's packs in the stores weren't going to work for you. So I had a McHale custom pack made in 2006. And it sort of just gave out. And I've done a lot of trips with it. And it was also repaired multiple times. But I really loved it because it was like, you know, I've never had a custom dress made, but it makes sense. Like, if you're going to backpack and carry something and you have an odd body shape, like, get it designed for your shape. So that was great. I never had any trouble with it. And then I just tested out a Gossamer gear because my McHale was, like, all shoddy and I didn't have time to replace it before the last hike. And Gossamer gear is what we use with Blue Ridge Hiking Company trips. So I just grabbed one out of the gear room. And I was really impressed. I was like, oh, packs have come a long way. Like, this is a really great pack. So I don't know that I, you know, I think I can be pretty happy now with a Gossamer gear pack. Yeah, going forward.
I used the Gorilla on the PCT last year. I really liked it. This will be a first, but so I don't know how to turn the text message thing from coming off. So I turned the phone or turned the volume off on my computer so it doesn't make noise when it comes through. I just got a very odd text from my mom, who doesn't hike.
Yeah.
Saying, your father and I are hiking the Camino next year. So I guess that's breaking news in some capacity.
That's really exciting.
They can be pen pals with my mom who will be on the AT.
Oh my gosh. Right. You have to interview them.
I should.
On this podcast.
That's a really good idea.
That
actually
would be so fun.
Wow.
Can I interview your mom? I would love to interview your mom.
You and my mom would get along really well.
I bet we would.
I mean, the thread of your book was relationships. My mom's like an award-winning marriage therapist. So
oh, really?
You guys could probably have some good conversations.
Oh, that's a lot of pressure since you just got married. Do you feel like that's a lot of pressure?
So one of my first jobs out of school was actually working for her. And part of that was reading all of her books. Because I just had to know her content inside and out. It served me very well, I will say. I married up and not in large part because I think I'm probably pretty good at relationships.
Okay, so what's your mom say the number one thing, the most important thing is for a successful relationship?
I've asked her this, and I think there are a lot of cornerstones, and you're putting me on the spot here, but I think communication is a big one. And something she actually attributes to a very popular relationship book is The Love Languages. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with this?
Yeah.
Yeah. Chance, if you're not, basically human beings have a tendency to give love in the way that they want to receive love. So like if you like getting gifts, your tendency is to give gifts to your partner. But that's not the way that it works. Obviously, like people value different things, and the key to making your partner happy is understanding what makes them tick and giving them love in the way that they want to receive it. So if you're interested, I think you can take like a free test online. It gives you a little bit of an outline about like what the love languages are and, you know, ways that you can meet those needs.
Yeah. I think it's cool though. Cause I mean, my love languages are much different now than 10 years ago when my husband and I got married. Cause you're kind of, I think they do kind of merge. Like you take on each other's love languages too.
Yeah. Life is change is the only constant, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Jen, thank you so much for your time.
So what did you get out of my book? What was the number one thing you got out of my book?
Oh, man. I think, honestly, it was that there were so many different paths to just being an elite endurance athlete that if, you know, you read Scott Jurek's story and you're like, oh, man, he's so different than me. Like, I could never be Scott Jurek. Like, that's fine. You don't have to be Scott Jurek. You can be Scott Williamson. And I don't want to go into his story because I want you to check out – I want people to buy your book because the story is – I couldn't believe it. It's just, there's so many different paths to it. Like you read about Warren Doyle, about you. There's Heather Anderson, obviously. There's so many different ways to achieve greatness. And especially in this world where like, you don't necessarily have to be the best athlete. This isn't the Olympics where a large part of it is mental fortitude. And I think it's just, if the biggest takeaway for me is that how inspiring these stories are. Like, it, I'm never going
to. So what has it inspired you to do? Not set an FKT, right?
Or I'm maybe? Never going to set an FKT.
No, okay. So yeah, what are you going to do?
Maybe fattest known time.
No, not
FKT. What's S?
Slowest?
Yeah, sure. It just pumps me up. Like, it makes me, I went on a run before we went on this because, like, I wanted the exercise endorphins to be pumping through so I could, like, accurately convey how I felt about the book. So I don't know if that's a good endorsement, but it's true. It's honestly, like, what specifically is it going to make me do? I don't know. I should sit down and set some concrete goals. But
yeah, and make a mantra.
That's a mantra is a good one. And that's something that I keep hearing about, like, high-level athletes that cite mantras as being beneficial. Maybe I do it subconsciously. I don't even notice it.
I bet, but you do.
Probably. Because, yeah, to your point that if you don't fill it with something positive, it's likely that something negative can fill that space.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Oh, I should also, before I let you go, everyone, obviously, you're probably familiar with The Trek. Jen's been doing a bi-weekly column on The Trek, a mailbag, where she's been tackling hikers' biggest pressing issues. Each one of these articles has been better than the next. And
yes. Can I say what I want? I want people to write to me with, like, good questions. I don't write to me about gear. I don't want to do gear. Don't write to me with, like, the logistics, like emotional, mental, like, wilderness ethics issue. Like, let's get to, like, the meaty stuff. You know, you can, there's enough about the gear.
Yeah.
So I want, bring the drama.
I was going to say, in reading your book, I can tell that relationships are a real passion for you. So maybe we'll get some relationship-themed questions.
About time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Jenna, again, thank you so much for your time. I know you've been on a whirlwind book tour. I'm actually, Jenna and I are going to your talk tonight.
Yay!
In Boulder. This will be old news for anyone listening to this. But you should check out Jen's book tour schedule, because how long are you?
We're on the road till mid-August. So our tour is at jenniferfardavis.com.
Okay.
You can see it there.
And then where else should people go to keep up with you?
I'm always supposed to say that social media thing, right? Like, you can find me there. But it is a lot of cute kid pictures and some hiking and some other stuff. And then we do have a hiking company in Asheville called Blue Ridge Hiking Company. And we do everything from half day hikes to a week long overnight. And we do have 55 miles of the Appalachian Trail where we can guide. So, and the majority of our staff is not only female, but also previous through hikers. Mm-hmm. So if you want to get out on the AT with someone who's been there and knows it and wants to share their love, then it's a good place to do it.
And definitely, definitely, definitely check out The Pursuit of Endurance. I really enjoyed it. Sincerely so. And I'm looking forward to the talk tonight. I'm sure it'll just be rehashing everything that I read, but I can't wait to hear it again.
Awesome.
Well, thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks.
Thanks, guys.
And that concludes our interview with the legend, Odissa, Jennifer Farr Davis. Thank you so much for coming on the show. So this is the part of the show where we get into our propaganda for the trek. And the one that I want to talk about today is, you know, we've done a lot of our gear roundups. Today, I want to talk about the best backpacks. Basically, the way that this works is our managing editor does the bulk of the research, just, you know, scouring the dozens and dozens and dozens of gear lists that our bloggers put out. We've got several dozen more writers on the website. So there's a lot of expertise that goes into these gear roundups, and this one outlines the best packs. So I know I always say that I'm not going to go through and list each one. So let's just
get that chance.
Yeah, let's just. First off, I want to hear what backpack one you used on the PCT last year, and two, is that the same what you're going to be using on the JMT this year?
Last year I used Mountain Laurel's Prophet, which is their 48 liter. Loved it. Ended up switching to the ULA circuit halfway through the hike because the hip straps got too big on me and I was just too lazy to figure out a way to.
It's that chocolate diet, the easy weight loss plan.
Easy weight loss, eat nothing but chocolate.
Yeah.
But I really liked that one. So this year I decided to get the MLD Burn. The only problem I had with the Prophet, apart from the fact that it didn't fit right, was that it had too much room as a 48 liter.
That's impressive for your first through hike that you had excess space with a 48 liter pack.
Isn't that weird?
Especially because the PCT is a trail where you're carrying a lot of water at points.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess I hated things being heavy, so I started getting rid of everything.
Yeah.
But now I have the burn, which is 10 liters less. So now it's same pack, 38 liters. And I'll be taking that when I go back to the Sierra at the start of August.
Do you get? Can you get your bear canister inside the backpack, or is it? Are you fixing it to the outside?
I'm sure I'll be fixing it to the outside.
Okay.
I haven't tried yet.
I was going to say, if you can get a... But I guess with a
I
small
could get,
bear
I can get the bear canister into the pack if that's the only thing in the pack.
So the small bear can is basically just like a giant Coca-Cola can. Like, it's not very big. You can get about a day and a half worth of food at the rate that I eat it. But that will get you past the permit inspectors. So the first one on their list, and I want to give a shout out here, is Gregory actually made the list this year.
I was surprised when I saw that.
Yeah. So this actually came off of the review of Maggie Slepian, our wonderful managing editor, and she reviewed the Optic and she loved it. And she's done all kinds. She's done mountaineering. She threw like the AT. She does weekend trips all the fucking time. So she's learned in her gear testing, and you know, she's tested a lot of packs, and she actually had really, really good things to say about the Optic, which is the female version. The Octal is the guys. And we actually, I think we're going to be publishing the Octal review here shortly, by a gentleman named Dominic, who's a triple crowner. So I haven't actually read it yet, but, so bated breath on that one, but shout out to Gregory for being relevant again, because, when I hiked the AT 2011 drink, Gregory what seemed like the Osprey today. Like, they're everywhere. You're really enjoying that little koi. They don't seem to get much love on trail nowadays. So maybe they're making a comeback. Next on the list is the ULA, a brand that you just recommended. This one is the Ohm.
Oh, that one's huge. It's 63 liters.
Yeah.
What are you putting in there?
So, I mean, that's something that should be addressed is, you know, there's going to be a lot of people listening to this who hike hyper ultralight who need, you know, 38 liter packs. And there's going to be people that hike with 65 liter packs.
That's true.
You know, starting off, you're probably going to be a little bit closer to the heavier end of that spectrum. Guys tend to carry a little bit more weight just because they think they can get away with it. You know, if I were going to point someone in a direction, like what the right literage is, one, that's an insane proposition because it depends on the rest of your gear. But two, you know, a lot of that depends on your skill set. So like I carried a very light tent last year, but it was a trekking pole tent. And it was something that you have to learn how to set up in a variety of terrains, a variety of weather conditions. And that's not, it's not like your average... It's not the, you know, the REI quarter dome where you can, like, it's a traditional freestanding tent that you can set up anywhere. Like, that's a very easy tent. It's going to do well in most weather conditions, but it's a little bit heavier and it's bulkier. So, like, your gear is going to dictate the size pack that you need. But if you, you know, if you have a little bit heavier gear, something on the larger end of the spectrum is going to make more sense to you. So if you're a newer backpacker and you're not going to spend a ton of time fine-tuning the rest of your gear, you're going to want a slightly larger backpack. If you know what you're doing, obviously you're going to want a smaller backpack.
Yeah. I should also say that I'm only 5'1", and you're not supposed to carry more than, what, like 30% of your body weight?
I forget what the ratio is.
Yeah, there's like some ratio. Yeah. And like if I were to fill a 60-liter pack, I think I'd be at like close to 50.
It would make you very top-heavy for sure.
Yeah, I think that's why it seems so big, because I could probably put most of myself in there.
Yeah. I hiked a good section of the PCT with a guy named Omboy.
Ooh, is that why?
Because he used that pack, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
His friends weren't more creative?
I actually think it's a pretty good name.
It's a good name, Omboy? But like a bad story.
I actually know multiple people that got their trail names based on a piece of gear that they had. Huh. Another one, shout out to Mariposa, which is foreshadowing for... Well, it's not the next one. That would have been pretty sweet. Actually, I'm just going to go through and do the highlights, because the Osprey's definitely heavily represented in this list. If you're going to go out on either the AT or the PCT, chances are, if you had to put all of your life savings onto a pack that you're going to run into, it's going to be an Osprey pack.
Mm-hmm.
ULA Circuit, I'm just going to list through them. So the Gossamer Gear Mariposa, it's a big pack. It's a 60-liter pack. I actually think that's what Jabba used through the Sierra last year. He used the Kumo for the rest of the trail, which is like basically almost half the size. But if you're a beginner backpack and you're looking for something with a minimal internal frame, this is a really good backpack. I used I use a Gossamer Grip pack as well. I use the size down, I guess two sizes down was the Gorilla. I think that's their 40 liter pack. More Osprey. This is the AHA and Exos. Exos is a very popular pack. Yada, yada, yada. The Granite Gear Crown 2. We put a review on this on the site recently. It's another, you know, old fashioned thru-hiker pack, but people love this pack. I've never actually tested it myself. Hyperlite Mountain Gear, getting a lot of press. They're popular, especially it seems on, I'd say, I guess, across all of the long distance trails. But, you know, it's hard to go wrong with Cuban fiber.
Yep. The only thing, the next one's Burn. That's what I've got.
Not Cuban fiber, Dyneema. They rebranded, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
The Burn is the next one.
The only thing I'm sad about with getting the Burn is Mountain Laurel came out with Cuban fiber ones.
Yeah.
And
you want that.
I hadn't scrolled down far enough because I didn't know they did. So yeah. I was like, I know which one I want. And I went and got it. And then I saw that they had Cuban fiber
ones. What's the price difference? I imagine it's way more expensive.
Not much, no? I don't think.
Mm, interesting.
Enough where like I would have gotten it had okay. I known.
Speaking of Dyneema, next on the list is Z-Pax Arc Blast. Z-Pax does good everything. And another guy that we hiked with last year, the director, maybe you guys are familiar, he raves about the suspension system. And this is another feature that makes the Osprey pack's very popular. Mm-hmm. Is basically the space between the pack and your back to allow a little airflow to prevent swamp back, akin to swamp ass, mm-hmm. which we are all very familiar with. And that is a very quick run through of the top backpacks. If you want a lot more depth and to learn, you know, what goes into a good backpack choice, I definitely recommend checking out this post. We will of course link to it in the show notes, and the title is The Best Backpacking Packs of 2018.
Sweet.
Okay.
Question?
Yes. Thank you.
We just got a question on our Instagram because we asked for them.
At Backpacker Radio.
Oh yeah. In case you didn't know what this was called.
Chaunce hijacked it this weekend on her recent Colorado Trail section hike and was listening to Safety Dance nonstop.
Which you'll find out in the next episode.
Correct. Way to coordinate all the non-chronological recording that we're doing.
We're not good at recording things in order.
No.
Okay, so this question says, I've read a million gear lists, and this is from B. Nader. I've read a million gear lists, and I know what backpack and shoes and water filter, etc. for the PCT, but I really want to hear what items of clothing I need. Like, can I walk in shorts the whole way? Will I be cold in that? How many layers do I pack? Etc. Basically a clothing breakdown. Thank you, hashtag PCT 2019. Oh, I almost forgot. Did Zach hike the AT?
It's a good question.
Yeah. The world may never know.
So the first part of the question is awesome. I'll let you address that first.
Okay, this is a girl, so I'm going to tell her what I did.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's
she probably
for boys.
Only cares about your answer. So.
So I had started with leggings and a t-shirt, shorts, a long sleeve, and then long sleeve thermals for sleeping. And that is way too much clothes. Basically,
it depends on the year, though. Did you not see any snow in the desert?
No, San Jacinto was entirely snow.
Oh.
There was a lot of snow.
But I mean, like, you didn't see any fresh snow. You didn't get snowed on.
I didn't get snowed on in the desert, but the desert was really cold.
Yeah.
But the point was more that the leggings, I thought if I was cold in the day, I'd wear the leggings, and if I was hot, I'd wear the shorts. Same thing with the long sleeve shirt versus the short sleeve shirt.
Yeah.
But then once I kind of got in the groove of things, I realized a lot of things will tell you that you need a separate pair of sleep clothes from your hiking clothes, because if your hiking clothes get sweaty, then they won't be warm at night, and that's bullshit, in my opinion. I would wear my shorts after a certain amount of time. And in the morning, if I was cold, I would put my thermals on over my shorts and my t-shirt, and I'd hike in my thermals over my shorts and t-shirt until it got warm enough or I was hiking far enough where I got sweaty, where I'd be hot. And I'd stop and I'd take off the thermals and have that layer underneath it, and then that would be good.
Yeah.
If I got cold, the thermals would go back on over it.
Mm-hmm.
So I sent home the long sleeve shirt and I sent home the leggings. And eventually, two pairs of underwear was more than I needed, too, because my shorts had built-in underwear,
mm-hmm.
and you don't really care.
wait a second.
You care, but
I think these minute details are exactly what people care about, because people yada, yada, yada over this, but like that's the difference of 4 ounces.
You stop caring about if your underwear are fresh out of the washing machine every day, and you can flip them inside out.
So I'm assuming, and correct me if I'm wrong, but with the lining in your shorts, that was your hiking attire, and then the underwear was your sleep clothes?
No, I would wear the underwear and then the shorts over them. Okay. Just because I didn't want the shorts. I would wash the shorts less frequently.
Right.
And like I could wash my underwear like and wear the shorts.
Okay.
But you know, you can have one pair of underwear and you can wear it and then you can flip it inside out if you really want to. And then if things get really bad, you can just take them off and use the
this side of the
liner.
Underwear is clean, but the other side.
So if you want exactly what I packed, it was one pair of underwear, one pair of shorts, my Hawaiian shirt, my sports bra, long thermal top and bottom, and 2 to 3 pairs of socks, depending on where I was. When there was snow, there was 3 pairs because I wanted one pair that I would only sleep in.
Yeah.
The end. And my puppy.
I actually think in having 3 pairs of socks, so 3 pairs of socks is not something I would recommend for the AT, but it is something I'd recommend for most parts on the PCT, just because like when it's super sandy, the amount of dirt that you accumulate, dirt and sand, is insane. Like it's so the IGTV is like a new thing that came out through Instagram.
I saw that.
Yeah. So the one video I posted is ridiculous. No one should watch it. But it was a video of me cleaning my feet in my tent while having a conversation with Jabba at the end of the night. And the one comment that I've gotten on that video was someone's like, so you were hiking barefoot, right? And I can't tell if they're joking or being serious. I'm assuming they're being serious because my feet are literally that dirty. It looks like I was hiking through the sand barefoot.
Yeah, literally, your feet look like you've just like walked around
right.
all day.
And then you can only imagine what your socks look like if your feet are that dirty.
And you'll like hit your socks on things because they're just rock solid. And right. they just like give off like bursts of like sand cloud.
Right. So
terrible.
Part of your sanity is having semi-happy feet. And part of that is cleaning your socks. And it's hard to manage healthy feet with just 2 pairs of socks in very sandy, dry areas because of that exact reason. So
I think even just like when your socks are wet and dry and like get into that crusty state, like just being miserable and hiking a long day and getting to camp before you eat dinner, knowing you can put on a pair of socks that are still soft because you haven't destroyed them.
Totally.
So nice.
Yeah, you feel like a new person. Even
if
you're putting soft socks over dirty feet, it still feels good.
So good. Yeah. It's like a little mittens on your little toes.
And that feeling goes quickly, but a little bit of peace that you get while it happens is totally worth it.
Plus, like then when you get your hole in your sock and you're like, this sucks, you've got that backup
here. Right.
That's the only place I would go luxury on.
Uh-huh. So I will say for me, and I think for most PCT hikers, again, we've touched on this subject a lot, but last year was a weird year just with all the snow and people jumping around. Sean's can attest to it, that your clothing system will change section to section. Especially the two outliers are going to be the Sierra and Washington, typically from north bounders.
Yeah.
From what I gather, obviously I hike southbound, but the Sierra is going to be cold and snowy in most years. In average years, you're still going to hike through a little bit of snow. And then when you get to Washington in late August, September, you're going to be dealing with a lot of rain. So you're going to add more layers to that. So, your clothing system there'll be some variance from segment to segment. So
I will say I carried the long sleeve in the desert, the not thermal one, a little longer than I like would have if it was a different segment because it was the desert and I wanted my arms covered. And having a thermal covering my arms in the desert was like hell. So, but that's the section thing. I sent that home once the desert stopped being an issue.
Mm-hmm. So this is actually the question that you ask is amazing because this is one of my biggest concerns going into my hike. And I asked Liz Thomas, who wrote the gear chapter in Pacific Crest Trials, to write a blog post on this exact subject. The title of the post is PCT Clothing System. And so she shared her clothing system broken down segment to segment, but she also asked 2 other thru-hikers that hiked the same year that she did. So the rest of the title is PCT Clothing System, 3 thru-hikers share apparel lists, tweaks, and best practices. And I think it's a really valuable article, not only because it shows what each of these hikers did, it represents both male and female, but they also represent a lot of brands that most people are not too familiar with, like Rail Riders, for instance. So I will link to that in the show notes. I'll give the quick Cliff Notes version of my answer. I don't know if I have an actual Cliff Notes version of any of my answers, but I think I did 2 pairs of, no, 1 pair of underwear. Shit, I can't even remember now. This was last year.
I wear underwear?
Yeah, no underwear. So I used the Patagonia baggies, which come with the liner. I actually cut the liner out because I find that I would get less chafing using ex officio underwear, which if you're not familiar with ex officio underwear,
that's what I carried.
Yeah, it's the best. It's the absolute best. Mm-hmm. By multiple players of this because it is the best out there. I use that with just the liner of the Patagonia baggy shorts. I think I had three short pairs of socks typically. And again, this would vary because like you get a hole in your pair of socks, you're going to throw it away. And there's sometimes a lag between you get the next pair of socks. Like, you know, so this is what was applicable for 80% of the time. I carried my women's leggings as Jabba. This was something that he turned me on.
Women's leggings?
Yeah. So Ibex, when they were still in business, I guess most brands offer women's leggings, but the trick is that you don't need the full length, that it's extra weight to go all the way down to your ankles. You get enough warmth just for going down to your shins. I also found out that I'm a woman's medium.
Ooh.
in wool leggings. Shorts. My hiking top. So I started off in Washington with a ex officio Bugs Away shirt, which is treated with permethrin. It's the insect shield, like proprietary insect repellent thing. And then I eventually switched to Patagonia's. I have the full gear list on the website. And I actually need to update it because I did the before, but not the after. Yeah. Everything will be in the show notes because I don't want to go through this entire thing. But it's not too dissimilar from Chaunce's. But, you know, dude's
I'll give you my brands
stuff.
Quick. Darn Tough was socks. Ex officio was the underwear. Hawaiian shirt from a thrift store. And shorts were Lululemon. Before that, my long sleeve shirt was Lululemon as well.
Hmm.
And then Ghost Whisperer.
It does seem like thrift store shirts dominate, especially in the PCT.
Yeah.
That being said, I was happy that I had, I think it's the Polygene. Fuck, I'm butchering.
Thrift store shirts are just fun.
Yeah, no, but I agree.
Like, as for the shorts, Lululemon lasts forever.
And the shirt was probably like $50 retail.
Same with my bra. My bra was Lululemon. Yeah, like, and that lasted the whole... I still wear that when I hike.
That's the
I
thing.
I wore that yesterday.
Is like the durability factor. You can get things that will last the full length of the trail on the cheap, but there's a better chance that it won't be the case. So if you're looking to pinch dollars, apparel is a good place to do that. But like if you've got the means and you want something that's reliable and there's something that you have attachment to, there's no harm in paying up for something good because that's typically what I do. And I think apparel is one of the things that you have the closest attachment to just because it's the thing that you're using all the time. Like it's
I think the fact that I'm going to be bringing the same bra and the same shorts to the
speaks
Sierra
volumes,
that
right.
I wore all last year and wore on the CT this year like
once
that's
I
some good quality.
I tried a couple of different brands before I went to ex officio underwear, and like once you try it, you just don't go back.
Yeah. Oh, and my thermals were the Patagonia heavyweight thermals.
Capeline.
Yes, Capeline.
Yeah, I do good stuff. No surprise. So that's a very quick and dirty rundown of our clothing systems. And as always, we want to hear what works for you guys. Yeah. So email us at podcast@thetrek.co and definitely check out the article. I'll link to it in the show notes, but it's the PCT clothing system on the Trek. Okay. Thank you for including that segment that was not included in the show notes. Now to Chaunce's favorite part of the show. She likes this more than sitting down with an actual trail legend. True or false?
It depends on the trail legend.
How about Jennifer Farnavis?
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about yourself. I was like, you're not a trail legend.
No. I'm not even a myth.
I don't know. No, I really like Jennifer Farnavis.
She's pretty fucking cool.
She was really nice.
Yeah, she's captivating. Yeah, it's hard to not get nervous when you're around someone like that.
Yeah.
I was okay, I think, just because she shares my last name, and I just assume that we're probably related at some point.
Maybe.
No.
Probably not.
Probably not. All right. Go ahead.
Ooh, okay. Wild and Wildly Entertaining by Brooke Nader. Nader? Did I just read this? I feel like I just said the same name.
Ooh. Do we have a crossover between...
Hold on. I swear to God, I just said Nader or Niter. Am I losing my mind?
You might be. We've been recording...
I don't think so.
We've been recording podcasts now for hours.
There's no way. No, this person that just asked that question is B. Niter.
Ooh, same person.
Do you think it's the same person?
All right, B. she's Niter. Accepting us. Well B. done.
Niter. Yeah, her name is Brooke, too.
All right, well done.
Damn it, Brooke Niter, you got us. All right.
This is how you get a shout out, is you ask us questions on Instagram.
And time them specifically close to each other.
Especially well done considering we recorded this part of the show. A little inside baseball here is we just recorded the bonus show and we recorded the JPD interview separately and we forgot to record the rest of the show. So we're now cleaning up
we're covering our ground.
Yeah.
This says wildly entertaining by Brooke Nider. Hi. I love the banter and love the advice. PCT 2019.
Did you take that one out of turn just because it was simple and you didn't want to read?
Is that not the first one?
Yeah.
Ah, shit.
I guess I'll take...
I scrolled down too far.
I'll take War and Peace here. This one is from Linz T. Pittsburgh. The title of the review is, You Give Me All the FOMO.
All of it.
Well done, Chance and Badger. I've listened to every single one of your podcasts on my long drives from Pittsburgh to Philadelphia for work. And do you have any idea how long of a drive that is? You're more East Coast than I am.
It doesn't really sound that far.
Yeah. Our resident PA specialist.
It just sounds like
specialty
a commute.
Specialist would be Jabba to let us know how long that is because I refuse to Google Maps it. As I swerve through the mountains on the PA Turnpike, all I can think about is my future AT/PCT hikes with my hubby. Sounds like they've got a good marriage.
Yeah.
Go through hiking with your significant other. Please keep posting. As I enter a 2-year nurse anesthesia program, I will need your stories, advice, funnies, and banter to help me through. Keep up the good work. Several exclamation points. Heart, Linz T. from Pittsburgh.
I would take a guess that we probably sound funnier when you're on anesthesia. That's the stuff that makes you laugh,
That's a good tip. Yeah, but the problem is I think you forget everything when you're on anesthesia.
Perfect. That's what people want, right? Listen to this and never remember.
Yeah, all right. As long as you can remember to review, give us a 5-star review before you enter.
While you're
the
on
bliss.
Anesthesia.
Yeah.
Yes.
Those would be good reviews.
Yes.
If you, for whatever reason you have trouble, you're not married to an anesthesiologist. What is it?
Anesthesiologist. That sounds right enough.
Yeah. Okay. Just go to your local opium den and you can figure it out.
Yeah.
Okay. You can take the next one.
This one's great. This one is by RushChev_M. Adequate. Something to listen to when you're all caught up on the rest of the podcast you listen to.
I like that one a lot. So as you learned today, you can pretty much roast us as long as you give us 5 stars
we'll read it.
Yeah.
As long as it's 5 stars.
All right, let's wrap up the show. On social, I am ZR Davis on Instagram and Twitter. Don't find me on Facebook, Chance.
You can find me on Instagram at Juliana_Chauncey or on YouTube at Juliana Chauncey.
And before we exit, I'll give a shout out to our Chuck Norris Award sponsors through Patreon.com, which we just got done recording our bonus show. And it was a lot of fun. There was a lot of inside scoop meat. Uh-oh, Chauncey's typing things
right now.
Keep
talking. This is okay. For after.
So our two Chuck Norris Award recipients are Evaristo Vieira. I think we've surmised that that's exactly how you pronounce it. I know we've struggled through that a couple times. We think that now that we've researched.
We've just decided.
Yeah. I don't know. Research is the wrong word. We just came to a consensus.
If that's not how it was pronounced, it is now.
Yeah. And Sawyer is the other one. You guys know them. And where can you find the podcast? I guess we don't ever talk about that.
No, we usually say it at the start.
Oh, you're saying to like review us on iTunes?
Oh, no, you can find us on Facebook you can find us on Twitter at.
Oh, but like that's not where you find the podcast. That's where you interact with us on social.
Yeah, you left that part out.
Did I leave that out? We talked about it. So. Oh, you're right. We did the personal plugs, but not the actual show.
That was the part.
Fuck, you're right. This has been
we've been
talking for a long time.
I try to leave subtle notes for Zach on the Google Doc so that he sees them and like it triggers something, and then he just stops his train of thought and says it out loud, and then gets confused.
I get worked up.
It doesn't go as smoothly as I thought.
I get worked up like an old Jewish man. Like, what do the bagels have? The sesame seeds.
The document is changing.
You can find us on social at Backpacker Radio on Instagram, at Backpacker Pod on Twitter, and search Backpacker Radio.
We're Backpacker Radio on Instagram, not Backpacker Pod.
I said Twitter, right?
No. I said on Instagram.
Roll back the tape. Backpacker Radio on Instagram, Backpacker Pod on Twitter. I'm pretty sure that's what I said.
I don't think so.
Shit, you might be right. And then search Backpacker Radio on Facebook. That is a good question. Where can they find the podcast? I guess if they're listening to us, they know where they can find it.
I think you're thinking deeper than I was.
It's been a long day.
Just Google Backpacker Podcast and find us places.
We're going to go.
Bye.
Happy hiking. Two goals.